We got a couple of things going on in the readings, both in the Torah portion and in the Gospel. What the Torah portion is of course, Moses' final address to his people before he dies. And what we have going on in the Gospels, not today's reading, but the readings we've led up to it, is Yeshua's final briefing to his people before he dies. And the thing that is interesting about it is they both focus on pretty much the same thing. What they focus on is joy. So if we look at the Torah portion, there's a gigantic chiasm going over a number of chapters, and it starts in Deuteronomy 12. And it goes all the way to where we are today. Deuteronomy 12 starts off with, "You shall destroy all the places where the nations whom you shall dispossess serve their gods, on the high mountains and on the hills and under every green tree." And then lists all the things that you'll destroy. And then down to verse 7, it talks about bringing your offerings to a central place. And then in verse 7 it says, "And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household and all that you undertake in which the Lord your God has blessed you." So this long section of what seem like civil statutes, if you will, starts off with, you only bring your stuff to one place, that's where you slaughter it, that's where you offer your offerings, and there you shall rejoice. We get to the end, and today's reading in Deuteronomy 26, and we've got this entire long list of civil statutes, if you will. And then we have 28, which is sort of a wrap-up. If you do all this stuff and you behave well, then you have this list of blessings in 28. And then, oh, by the way, if you don't, and then you have this long list of curses. I'm trying to give you structure here. So today's reading in 26:9, this is the farmer that is instructed to come and bring his produce once a year. And the instructions of the farmer is you're going to bring it to the central place, which we talked about back in 12, and you're going to make this little speech saying, this is who I am and this is how I got here. And then in verse 11 it says, "You shall rejoice in all the good that the Lord your God has given you, to you and your house, you and the Levite and the sojourner who is among you." So when you come to this central place and you bring your first fruits every year, you do this little speech and then you rejoice. So then we get down to 28:45, sort of the end of the blessing and curses. "All these curses shall come upon you and pursue you and overtake you till you are destroyed, because you did not obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes that he commanded you. They shall be a sign and a wonder against you and your offspring forever, because you did not serve the Lord your God with joyfulness and gladness of heart, because of the abundance of all things. Therefore you shall serve your enemies whom the Lord will send against you in hunger and thirst and nakedness and lacking everything." So it begins with, this is the covenant. And you've got what seem like a whole bunch of detailed little laws, but it really isn't. It's basically an exposition on the Ten Commandments. So the Ten Commandments are sort of the Cliff Notes version. And then you have this long section of, this is what Ten Commandments look like, played out in your everyday life. But the beginning of this, it says, you'll rejoice. And at the end, it says, all these curses will come upon you if you don't rejoice. Let's now fast forward to Yeshua and the Last Supper. Been talking about this for several weeks. Yeshua knows what's going to happen. He knows that this is the final address that he has to his people before he leaves them, just as it was Moses' final address to his people before he left them. Now, Yeshua's coming back in 3 days. It's just a short trip. Moses has been gone up until the time of Yeshua. But his disciples don't realize that. So what he's doing is he is telling them, this is what's going to happen, and you're going to be scattered and so forth. But he starts off back in 15. John 15:8. By this my Father is glorified, that you, the disciples, bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. In other words, if you bear fruit, you will prove yourself true disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. And if you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be full. So that's the beginning of this long soliloquy in the Last Supper. And what he's saying is, what I'm doing is I'm preloading you with joy, my joy, so that your joy can be complete. So then we get down to chapter 16. I'll pick it up in verse 19. A little while and you will not see me, and again a little while you will see me. As I say, it's a short trip, 3 days, but they don't recognize that. But what he's saying is, I am about to leave you. That's the message that they are getting. So truly, truly, I say to you, you will weep and lament, but the world will rejoice. You will be sorrowful, but your sorrow will turn to joy. When a woman is giving birth, she has sorrow because her hour has come. But when she has delivered the baby, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. You also, you have sorrow now, but I will see you again, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will take your joy from you. In that day, you will ask nothing of me. Truly, truly, I say to you, whatever you ask of the Father in my name, he will give to you. Until now, you have asked nothing in my name. Ask, and you will receive, that your joy may be full. You sort of getting the message there? Joy, joy, joy. And we're getting the same thing in Deuteronomy as Moses is getting ready to leave his people and leave them to Joshua. So why is this important and why is it done that way? One of the things that lots of people in the Sunday church focus on, incorrectly, quite frankly, is this long list of detailed statutes and the idea that you must obey all these statutes. I don't know how many Christian preachers I've heard who say something like, oh, did you violate this? Then you're a sinner. And off you go. The focus is on obedience to all these niddly little detailed laws. I mean, did you not run the hen off before you took her eggs? Oh, if you didn't run the hen off before you took her eggs, then you have violated the commandment of the mother bird and you're a sinner. So what I'm suggesting to you is that's the wrong focus. I'll remind you that in Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, there is no word for obey. And the word that is translated obey in all of these statutes is a variation on shema, which is listen. In other words, listen to what I'm saying, not do what I told you. Difference in emphasis, if you will. And the key here is if you are in relationship to God, and your relationship to God brings you joy, then you will listen to him. So if you're going through life listening to God, and the reason you're listening to God is because of your joy in your relationship, then all of these details will sort of fall out naturally. And you don't have to go, I mean, you should, don't get me wrong. You should know the law about the mother bird and all those kinds of things. I'm not saying that those are unimportant, but the emphasis here is your relationship with God and the fact that you are listening to his voice. And as you listen to his voice and you go through life, you will do things in a way that are pleasing to him. And if you stumble, as we all do, you'll recognize that you've stumbled and you come right back. If, however, your relationship with God you take for granted, you go through life and you're enjoying the blessings, but you sort of forget what the blessings come from. You live in a society that's highly blessed. We got lots and lots of abundance. And you lose track of how those blessings came to be, and you start taking them for granted, What happens then is you start looking around. So your focus ceases to be on God, and it starts to be on the world. Where you wind up then, eventually, is where we are and where Israel was before they go into exile, which is idol worship, injustice, violence, murder, all of the things that are going on in a society that has lost track of its relationship to God, has lost its joy in the relationship, and is simply taking the abundance for granted. And what Moses says is when you get to that stage, that's when all these curses are going to start to kick in. Because you're going to wind up doing things not with relationship to your relation to God, but just whatever you happen to feel like and whatever you think is going to get you ahead in the moment. As opposed to, wait a minute, I have a relationship here with God, and that relationship gives me joy. Therefore, the things that I do in light of the fact that that relationship exists. And oh, by the way, the abundance that he then gives you is the abundance of a loving father. Oh, I'm delighted in you. You want stuff? I'll give you stuff because I delight in you. Not because you deserve it, but because I have a relationship with you and you delight me. So, if you lose that joy in the relationship that you have with God, then everything goes downhill from there, and it doesn't go downhill immediately. The United States has drifted away from God for quite a while, and we are gradually going downhill until now we're up to our hips and weirdos. And that's the natural progression of things, just like Moses says, that that's going to be the natural progression of things. And what Yeshua is doing in his final briefing, where he's emphasizing joy, 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 is he is spring-loading his disciples not to get into that path and drift off into the world because they're terrified. Now, as I say, it's only going to be 3 days, so they aren't going to have a lot of time to go astray. But what he's telling them is the relationship that we have, that I have with the Father, is one of joy. And he says elsewhere, if you guys knew where I was going, you would rejoice because I'm going back to the Father. Even though the door back to the Father is going to be terribly difficult. The door back to the Father for Yeshua is the cross. And that door is no fun, but where he winds up is a source of joy. And if you guys understood that, you would rejoice for me. And so I am leaving with you joy that may sustain you until I come back. And then he's going to have 40 days of teaching and so forth. And then he's going to go up into the overhead. And that's when Moses' briefing kicks in, which is to say, you need to have joy in your relationship with the Father. You need to have joy in the relationship with your Son. Because if you don't have joy, then where you wind up is in Deuteronomy 28, which is not where you want to wind up. Talked about joy before. Joy and happiness are two different things. You know, you can tell they're spelled differently. Happiness is an emotion. Emotions are wonderful. I use them myself sometimes. But they are transient. And they're transient by design. So your emotions go up and down and so forth. And if you didn't have down, you wouldn't recognize up. So emotions are transient. In fact, the example that Yeshua uses is childbirth. I've been involved in 4 childbirths. I was in sales. She was in delivery. But it's a struggle. Now, I didn't do it, but she did. And I could see that she was doing it. It was very difficult. But once the child is there, it's like a switch has been turned. So you have this emotional up and down. Everything's really hard, and then, wow, we have a baby. You know, you have sadness and pain and so forth, and then you have happiness, but you also have joy because you now have a relationship with another human being. So emotions are transient. They're designed to be that way. If they weren't, everybody would only have one child because you would never convince your wife to have another one. And it's the same thing with if you fall off a horse, you got to get back on. Otherwise, you're going to forever be afraid of horses. Same thing with driving a car. Have you ever been in an accident? It's a major emotional jolt. But most people get back in a car the next day once they get repaired and they drive again. So the emotions are designed to be transient. Joy is not designed to be transient. Joy is designed to be permanent. Being stuck in an emotion is not healthy. Emotions go up and down. They're designed that way. And if you get stuck in an emotional high, it's what's called being manic. And that's not good. If you get stuck on an emotional low, it's being depressed. That's not good either. The fact that things go up and down is healthy, and that's what you should look for. And if you ever get stuck in one place or the other, you ought to say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here, because I should not be stuck in one state. So what Yeshua is doing here is he's preparing his disciples for the fact that they're going to be scattered, he's going to be arrested, he's going to be killed, all of that kind of stuff, and he's preloading them with joy so that their emotions, which are going to go sideways, are not going to lead them into a bad place. So, how do you get joy? Well, joy comes from a relationship. Joy should come from relationships. You have a joy in your marriage. You have a joy with your children. You have a joy in your relationship with God. So those are things that should not be transient. Now, up and down it happens, you know. Even in the best of marriage, you sometimes yell at each other. It's okay. Just understand that those things are transient. And the important thing is the joy of the relationship. What can drive you off joy? In other words, what can knock you off your pins? There's two things. The first one is fear. If you get stuck in fear, you can lose track of your relationship because you are focused on fear and on your circumstances. That's what Yeshua is preloading his disciples against. They are going to go through a massive period of fear. They're going to be afraid to be arrested. They're going to see that the master has been crucified. Are we next? That kind of thing. So fear has the potential to knock you off your joy. The other one, which is harder, is pride. And pride can knock you off your joy. Remember we said back in the Deuteronomy that if you go through life and you take all of these blessings for granted, in other words, pride, I deserve it. I'm getting them because I'm really good. What winds up happening is pride will take you off of your focus on the relationship that got you all that good stuff, and you will then drift off and you will find gods that feed your pride. Now, one of the bad things or nice things, depending on your perspective, about pagan religions is you can get a god that will tell you anything. And in fact, I think I've talked about this before. There's a great variety of pagan gods, and pagan gods are not exclusive. You want this particular thing? Well, you go over to that temple and worship over there, and you get this. And you're tired of that for right now, so you can go over to that temple, and you can worship, and you can get that. And those two gods are not jealous. They're quite happy to pop in and out. Our God is jealous. Only one. You don't worship anybody else, period. Which is completely contrary to paganism. And the reason for that is because people will choose gods that feed the sins that they want to engage in. We do. That's why God says, don't mess with any of them. Stay focused on me. Stay focused on the relationship. I will sustain you. And in that sustenance, you'll have joy. But you have to stay focused on me. You can't shop around for other gods. One of the things that Yeshua says in his final briefing is Israel, when the temple was a going concern, always had the presence of God in the midst of the nation. So seeing God was not a problem. You could tuck a sheep under your arm, truck yourself up there, sacrifice, and you could be in the presence of God. It happened on Yom Kippur. If the high priest didn't do it right, the presence of God would squash him like a bug. So the presence of God was very real during temple times. We don't have a temple. We don't have any place to take our sacrifices. So what is the remedy for us that is equivalent to having the temple in the middle of the camp or in the middle of the nation? The Holy Spirit. The Spirit then becomes to us the presence of God, and He's not always right with you. As I'm fond of saying, if you had a highway patrolman sitting in the right-hand side of your car, you'd never speed. So there's some distance, but He comes and goes often enough that you have an understanding that God is real. God is with us. God is a comforter. The Spirit's a comforter, remember? And one of the things, by the way, the Spirit is not, is a problem solver. He's a comforter. You got to solve your problems. But He will give you comfort in that process, and if you ask Him, He will give you wisdom and insight to help you solve those problems, but you're the one that's got to solve them. So the idea then of having the Spirit present, which is what Yeshua is talking about in His final briefing, says, I'm going to the Father. In a little while you're not going to see me, and then you're going to see me again, and then you're not going to see me anymore, because I'm going to be up in the overhead with the Father. But what I am giving you is I'm giving you the Spirit. And with that Spirit, then, you'll be able to maintain this sense of connection and joy that I want you to have, and you'll be able then to go out and bear the fruit that I want you to bear. So, as you go through your life, don't get stuck in a up or down emotion. That's not good. And by the way, don't get stuck in the middle either. You're designed to have emotions. They can be great fun, and they can be real downers. But you're designed to have them. But don't lose focus on the relationship with God as you are going through circumstances and your emotions are going either way up or way down or sideways. Remember that you've been given the Spirit and the joy of the Lord in order to bear fruit. So, go bear some fruit.